Hey, thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Girl Dad Show. I am very, very excited for my guest today. I have been befriending this gentleman for the last 3 months very, very intensely, and it has been really, really fun to get to know him. That sounds really awkward, actually. I should
Yeah, it's a little, you know, your mind wanders.
A little bit, yeah. I had to put some containers to that commentary, but as we get into the conversation, it'll come out why. But I've been working with Healy very, very closely over the last few months on his company and getting to know him so well. So I'm super excited for him to be on the show, and I get to share a story with you and learn more about him, because I've learned about him on the business side, but I'm really excited to learn about you more on the parenting side and on the dad side. So Healy, without further ado, awesome. Do you mind sharing with me and the listeners a little bit about yourself? Where do you work at? What do you do?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Young, first of all, thanks for having me, man. And the second is, if people don't sing your praises enough, they need to. Because for context, Young joined as a, I don't know, what would you call it, like fractional CFO, basically? Yeah. We met, and in the first 15 minutes, he was just like the best combination of a strategic thought partner, hype man, and just confidant. You know, like, you are rare, Young. I hope people tell you that, but you're incredible, man. I feel honored that we got to work together on this. We came out victorious, finally. Yeah, a lot of effort went in. So anyways, wanted to kick off by saying that.
Thank you, man. That's very kind of you. I think you're the first person to reverse the intro. I love it. It's amazing.
Dude, you gotta reverse those intro. Yeah, so quick background is, my name's Healy Cipher. I'm the CEO of Boompop, COO of Atomic, which is a venture studio. Boompop is an AI travel company. We focus specifically on corporate group events. So think things like offsites, retreats, sales kickoffs, customer summits, stuff like that. Turns out it's a really, really big industry and one of the fastest growing in the history of travel, definitely post-pandemic. And it's a lot of fun. All we do is think all day about how to get people together, how to make the clients happy, how to make the teams pumped, and how to go to cool places. We just got back actually yesterday. I was with Young, by the way, full disclosure, from the auto camp in Cape Cod. And it was awesome. You know, we spent a few days doing intensive operating planning, doing intensive product road mapping. And I have to say, I am getting high on my own supply for sure. Yeah. And the way it works, and everyone should try it out eventually, but you put in a really simple prompt like, hey, I want to do a 50-person exec retreat somewhere in upstate New York or within a 2-hour drive of New York City. These dates, you send a survey to your people, ask when they can make it. Here's what I'm trying to do. And it instantly comes back with AI-powered itineraries. It can reach out to every vendor. It can book them for you, makes an itinerary itself, makes the website, even talks to your guests on your behalf. The goal is take event planning, which takes, you know, 40 to 80 hours, down to 40 to 80 minutes. That's the intention. So check it out, boompop.com.
Yeah, and I will say I'm a huge fan of it. I especially love the text messaging tool. That thing was awesome. Yeah, it definitely relieves a lot of pressure from someone having to coordinate all the different people and all the crazy questions that people ask that person. Totally. It's kind of interesting because it's very quiet because you just text it yourself. You know, you just text all the questions.
About totally. Yeah. Stuff. Like, it's make me a packing life. List. What's the weather? Like, where should I go? You know?
Yeah.
I could ask, when does Young's flight land? And it tells me. So yeah, it's cool. Anyway.
Yeah, it is cool.
That's Boompop.
Walk me through why you started this business and what was the genesis of this?
Yeah. So this came out of Atomic, which is a venture studio where I am the chief operating officer. And at the time I was running the 0-1 team, and it was a personal pursuit, Young. I fundamentally believe humans want a sense of belonging. I think it's deep in our tribal blood. And during the pandemic, it was really hard to do that. And so we started a company called Boombox, which was a virtual events company. All the stuff we did and probably didn't like, you know, it's like the Italian guy, like, here's where the wine is from on his map, you know, over Zoom. And you're like drinking wine by yourself. And look, it did awesome. Like we gained over 2,000 customers in a year. But at the ending of that first year, this was like 2021, 22, all of our customers kind of started saying, hey, look, this is fun doing the wine tasting or the cocktail things or the, you know, keep the Zoom. But, you know, I can only do it so many times. And then I close my laptop and it turns out I'm just drunk by myself in my basement. We want to get together in person. Right. So I saw this stat and I'll never forget it. It said that they expected, this was by Castle, this big commercial real estate company, it expected office occupancy to level out around 40% of what it was pre-pandemic. And I remember seeing that number going, holy manoli, like if that is real, it could be one of the biggest shifts of dollars from commercial real estate to somewhere. So where is it to somewhere? Like where is it going to go? We surveyed our 2,000 customers and asked them, and they all just said, hey, we're kind of not going to go back to offices in the exact same way. We might have some offices, smaller, more distributed. The bulk of that spend we used to spend, 70% we're going to put into events. And I remember I was going, events? And they said, yeah, if you want a great team, you got to do offsites. If you want great customers, you got to take them to the ball game, do customer summits. And if you want a sales team motivated to kick butt, you got to do a sales kickoff and an incentive trip. And then they said, can you do this for us? Mm. And initially our answer was no. Like, that sounds awful. What a hard, you know, anachronistic manual thing. And, you know, long story short, we realized that AI was perfectly primed for this. The why now was very clear. And you fast forward to where we are as a business. Now we're doing about just under 100 million run rate of kind of bookings. We did something like 32,000 hotel nights last year. And it's a ton of fun. And I think we got a real one on our hands here.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love to hear the genesis stories of these journeys, because it's so fun to hear how it all starts, you know. And it's like, it's never the obvious answer. It's
never.
Sometimes it's born out of, like, yeah, exactly, just situation, you
gotta be,
just circumstance.
You got to be a heat-seeking missile to product market fit. That's the most important thing as a 0-to-1 leader.
That's right. And then let's talk a little bit of a pivot switch here. Talk to me about your family and kids.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Yeah,
here's my squad. Can I show a little? Here's my crew.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. That's awesome. Oh my gosh, that's great. Look how chunky she was. Yeah, she was such a little chunkster.
I have an amazing wife who's a professor. Her name's Rachel. Obviously, Young, you know her. Rachel loves Young, for all you people at home. And one of my rare work friends that Rachel actually really likes. And then I have a daughter, Lily, who's 2.5, and a son, Theo, who's 4.5.
Oh, man. And then when did you start Boom Pop? Like, how many years
Boom
ago?
Boom Pop started in its current manifestation about 9 quarters ago. So I think it was like late 22, early 23.
So around the time, if my math is correct, around time Lily was born.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's right. It was just before Lily was born. That's right.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So you actually really swallowed the pill when you made the decision to do this. Start a startup while you were about to have a second kid.
Totally. And, you know, I think, and you know this about me, Young, but one of the things I'm working really hard at in life is being a good dad and being a good partner and being a successful entrepreneur and being a good, you know, work partner and trying to do all that stuff. Like, you need to sleep and you need to work out and you need to eat well. And it was really hard to begin with. I think I'm still working through it. I've figured out a little bit more now, but yeah, it was hard. It was definitely hard.
Yeah. I mean, why and how did you make the decision to do it anyways, even though you knew you were having a second?
It's funny. I whenever someone asks me, like, hey, Healy, like, you know, you've sold a few companies. Should I be an entrepreneur? My first answer, I always say, don't do it.
Exactly.
And they go, and if they insist another time, like, no, I really want to do it. I understand the risks. I understand how hard it's going to be. I don't mind, you know, chewing glass and staring into the abyss. I say, seriously, don't do it. And if a third time they insist, no, I'm going to do it. It's my life's work. And, like, they're really passionate about it, despite my dissuading, I then go, maybe.
Nice.
It's hard, you know, and it's ups and downs in the beginning, often throughout the day, throughout the hour, frankly.
Yeah.
I think, look, I'll, it's a personal story, but so I've been super lucky. My first startup sold after I joined 7 months in. I had come from a consulting job in New York. It was a really big get for me. Like, when I jumped to that company, I had $34 in my bank account, literally. Mm-hmm. I come from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I had moved to Palo Alto, and my dad, who I love and look up to, like every son probably looks up to their father, he was like, don't take that job. Why would you possibly join a startup in Palo Alto when you have a great consulting job in New York where you're doing very well? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I said, I'm going to do it. And 7 months later, I all of a sudden was able to afford a wedding in California to the love of my life, Rachel, which was a huge moment for me. And I realized, my gosh, this kind of nonlinear route into startups can you learn so much, you have so much impact, but it can be, if you're lucky, life-changing. And you fast forward to 2019, I was selling my third company, which was a really, I also love boring companies, as you can probably tell. If you ever walk into a McDonald's or a Burger King or a Wendy's and you see one of those touchscreen kiosks, you order food, mm-hmm. We did all those for the top 40 quick serve restaurants.
So awesome.
Yeah,
so awesome.
It was awesome. And I took that company over as CEO. They had acquired my company before that, and they'd been around for kind of 18 years, doing very well. And the founder at the time said, look, I need your help selling the company. It's clear you can sell businesses. Can you help out with that? And so I did it. And 15 months later, you know, we sold. Now, part of that, and this gets to your question, and it's a long way of answering it, Young, is it was on paper my biggest success. In my heart, it was one of my biggest failures. And the reason is, towards the very ending of it, I had negotiated what's called a management carve out, an MCO, where you say, hey, a set aside of the acquisition dollars are going to go to certain members of the team. And it was to the executive team, but it was really important to me that the team felt it. And so I set aside $1 million to go to the team, which you know, doesn't sound like a ton in Silicon Valley, but look, if you're in Arizona,
yeah,
and honestly, anywhere, I think if you get a $25,000 bonus, that's a life changer. That's a, yeah, lot, a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
And so that was my goal. I wanted everyone on the team to see some part of this upside. And I had this really big debate with the founder, and ultimately I made this huge mistake where I acquiesced that he could determine the allocations of that $1 million. He, by the way, made $48 million to give a sense of the outcome here. Like, he's,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
And so I never forget, I was going through setting up the wires on where that $1 million was going to go. And the handshake had been, it's going to go to the team. And it was a bunch of random, honestly, kind of piddly numbers to people I hadn't really met. Some team members, some random guys in Indiana. But the bulk of it, I think it was like $800,000 this founder sent to one person.
Oh, wow.
Young, any guess who that person was?
No.
Like, what's the worst possible guess? And I'll give you the spoiler. He already made $48 million.
Himself?
Himself, man.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was gutted. I felt like I had completely failed the team. I had failed, like, you know, I think being the CEO is a sacred duty to take care of the people that trust you to run the company. I take it very seriously.
Yeah.
And Rachel and I, and this is to Rachel's credit, we wrote personal checks.
Oh, wow.
Hey, we're sorry. Like, you owe this and I failed you. And ever since then, I've had this like chip on my shoulder, Young, to want to not only be able to follow through on that promise to my early team members and early investors, frankly, that this can be a really big outcome and I can take care of them, but also that you can run that company in a high integrity, very open and transparent way. And hopefully you've seen, as you've been getting close to BoomPop, I'm trying to live that every day, and I couldn't rest without trying to do it and to prove it to myself that you could be a genuinely good, high integrity person and build a successful business. But I also felt like it was a story that I wanted to be able to tell. I think that it's so, perception's so tricky, and there's so much belief out there that there is, like, you know, if you screw the people over and you take advantage, that's how you're going to be successful. And my preference is that there's an equal amount of opposite stories, which I think are more often the case, which is the most successful leaders are the ones who give and who make their team successful. And so that's a big part of it. And that was part of the decision-making matrix, was when my kids grew up, I wanted them to have that dad.
So good, man. I love that. It does actually shed a lot of light on why you're so driven to achieve these things. Because I will say, I mean, this is a lot harder to explain quickly, but I'll allude to the fact that there have been many points in the last 3 months where you were faced with some really, really hard decisions, just nonstop.
Yeah.
And you would literally chop wood until, like, you figured out exactly the maximum juice you can get for every win, 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 and win situation. And I'm always like, why are we wasting calories? I'm tired. Let's just make the decision and go.
Give yourself more credit. You're right there with me, man. You know.
Yeah, but it is pretty interesting to hear this story, because the intention and drive was coming from somewhere.
Yes.
And that's very, very cool to hear that.
Thanks.
And
thanks.
It's very awesome, man. It's very honorable, man. And I'll definitely try to support you a little bit better now that I know that. What does Rachel think about BoomPop and where you're at right now and what you're doing and this kind of dream and vision?
I think, so she is, by the way, I just have to say this, she's so smart, and she has like the obvious academic intelligence of being a, you know, PhD
totally.
And having two masters, and she has, I always joke,
totally.
Between the two of us, we have 5 degrees and she has 4 of them. Like, she's credentialed. But the amazing thing about her is she has this practical intelligence. And so she is probably one of my best, like, when I'm just sitting on the couch, thought partners of like, hey, like, you should price it this way, or think about this, or this is the obvious way to do it, or think about it. I mean, I remember this one time she walked by and I was doing an engineering stand up. And afterwards she goes, who the hell was XYZ? And I was like, oh, that was just this guy. And she goes, you got to fire that guy. He's not doing shit. And I was like, how did you know that? And we did within a week. How did you know that? You walked by for 15 seconds. Like,
very perceptive.
Yeah. She's, I think, look, she's very supportive. She knows that I want to do this and I care about it a ton. I think the counter to that, though, is in these really stressful times, I'm not the best version of myself. And we all know how this works. You become the worst version of yourself in the most safe places, which tends to be with your partner, with your kids. So I think she's very relieved that the financing is coming to a close, knock on wood.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that's just something I don't know if everyone, but definitely me as a dad, it's something I have to work through. Is when I'm really stressed at work, how do you not take that home? And is it even possible? And, you know, it's like, your kids aren't going to remember what you're going through at work. They're going to remember that you ignored them, or on your phone during bath time, or you just didn't, or you weren't around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, you know, She is an amazingly supportive partner, but I feel like I got to make up for some stuff over the last few months for sure.
Totally. And I will say that I think you're probably your worst critic. I'd say that there's
she's much Italian. More.
Okay, so she might compete with you, yeah. But I will say that I feel like for whatever it's worth, you have been very balanced through this process. Yeah, all things considered, you're very normal. You're very human, and it's been really fun to watch you at your worst because it was still really great. So
wow, for thank you, man. That's really worth, kind yeah. of you. That's really kind of you.
I am curious, though, what your kids think you do for work. What does little Rugrats think you do?
I don't think they have any idea. I think they just know that sometimes I'm at work, I'm at this desk in my basement, which is really mm-hmm. confusing for them, and that other times I'm just not here. And beyond that, I think they just think it's like a place that I go. I don't know if they have any idea what I do. Yeah. But they're also quite young. I mean, how do you explain it? You know, like...
Yeah.
Like, dad who runs a company, like, what's a company? Like, well, it's like a bunch of people doing stuff.
Do they understand the concept of, like, being like, a founder, though? And
not yet. No, I don't think so. I think they will. You know, they're early. Like, Theo's 4.5.
Totally. Yeah, it's going to happen because, I mean, I think my kids thought I cleaned pools until they were, like, 6. And then they started understanding the concept that I, like, talk to people and stuff. You know, so I totally get that. I just wanted to know if there was any kind of inkling on it.
No,
I do want to flip the question, though. Do you want them to be entrepreneurs?
Man, I think all the time about what I want my kids to do. And I think the conclusion I've come to is I just want them to be happy pursuing whatever it is they want in their life. I think it's really easy for me to say now because it's not serious yet. When it gets into school and academics and interests and sports and social and grades, and I'm really interested to see if that point of view and mantra persists. So if they want to, yeah, for sure, I'd love to support them. And my hope is Boom Pop's gone really well, and they have a pretty lofty safety net, you know, and
a solid angel investor.
Yeah, you know, I'll take that money. I'll tell you this too, by the way. I just want to say this out loud for 5 seconds, which is my parents, to their credit, who are not in the startup world. My dad ran banking software and was in intelligence before that. My mom's been a teacher. I don't know if you knew this. They invested in Boompop.
No way.
Yeah, man. And they did it. They did it, by the way, in the darkest hour when I needed the money the most. I almost get emotional saying this. They said, what can we do? They said, if we need to do whatever it is to support you, we will do it. And I was like, man, I can't ask you that. So I would love to play that role for my kids for sure. I don't know. I'm also, I mean, gosh. I don't know if I totally even know what the world's going to look like in 18 years when they're really going for it. You know, it's going to be really wild. Yeah. If they wanted to do it and made them happy, yes, I would support them. And I would hope that my experience would give them an unfair advantage to being successful if they chose that.
It's amazing, man. I love that. That's a really good answer. And then let's move on to your parents, actually. Okay. What was your childhood like?
I'm from Nebraska, but the plot twist is I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I was in Riyadh for 16 years.
So cool.
My dad, well, man, he went to Riyadh with just like early 80s when they were kind of standing up the internet. And his initial job was to set up the computer systems to transfer information between the ministries. And all the ministries of the whole government were in Riyadh. So it was kind of a nationwide thing. And then eventually just rose the ranks and became the director of urban intelligence services for the Saudi government, which is pretty cool. I think I can't verify this. I think he was maybe the highest foreigner in the history of the Saudi government. And it was awesome. I mean, I went to an international school. All my best friends were like Ethiopian or Swedish or Sudanese or like Egyptian or whatever. And it was every language, every consideration set. The things that we thought about, the things that we talked about were so inherently global. And when you're a couple of a third culture kid, when you're, you know, because you're not American, you're not Saudi, you're like in this kind of weird, I don't know, enclave of culture. It was such close bonds. Like I still, when I go around the world, I have friends in every city, which I love. And you know, they're a lot of my friends are really successful too, which is pretty cool. So it was fun. I loved it. You know, it was definitely militarized. You know, everyone had villas, everyone had personal drivers, there was security everywhere. Often Western communities were in these things called compounds, which is like a neighborhood, but basically like walled and guarded. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
I feel so grateful for it. You know, I think it was a different era of Saudi, though. It wasn't Sharia law. It was Sharia law. It was Wahhabi controlled. And so there were no movie theaters. You couldn't buy Barbies or G.I. Joes because that was considered haram. You know, if you like bacon, tough luck. You're not going to find that anywhere. And, you know, you had like there was a religious police called the Matawa where if they saw you outside with a woman that wasn't on your official document called your gama, which said like your wife, your cousin, whatever, they could send you to jail. and they did it all the time. So it was those are parts of it, but you know, it's like the Truman Show. You kind of don't question it. It's what you grow up in.
Yeah.
And it was only till later in life, like 15, 16, when I started to really seek out the freedoms that I was being denied.
Yeah.
And that's when I went back to Nebraska to an all boys Catholic boarding school in Elkhorn, called Mount Michael, which, talk about a culture shock. I mean, yeah. I can tell you some stories there, but it was cool.
Yeah. So what do you think is some of the biggest, because you have a really, really interesting childhood, but what are some of the things that you think have really impacted you and kind of formed your kind of entrepreneurial journey and your decision to go do this thing? Because it doesn't sound like, actually it does. A lot of these culture shocks and kind of mixtures of points of views probably did allude to that. Maybe that's what broke the generational thing of your dad's kind of company man to you being an entrepreneur, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, it's a good question. I hadn't really contemplated it. I think, you know, perhaps my kind of like base belief that people want to belong comes from that, you know, wanting to help people belong. Because it was a rotating cast of kids all the time as they were coming in out of Saudi. And so wanting them to feel like they belong, wanting to feel like you belong. Perhaps that's part of it. I also have always kind of been like the social, like I'd always get people together and have parties and organize dinners. That's just been part of my DNA. And so I'm sure that's part of it. You know, I think things I think about a lot, not uniquely, but you know, I'm a geopolitical nerd. Like I love that stuff. I love reading about it. I love thinking about it. I'm so aware of all of the things that have kind of happened basically since World War II internationally to lead to how lucky we are in the States to have it this way. And I think in that way, I think having a certain amount of just default gratitude to how wonderful this country is so critical. And I think I uniquely have that because I grew up, you know, and a lot of my mentors were Marines at the embassy who taught me how to rappel and taught you how to, you know, be respectful to your parents and stuff like that. I think also for that reason too, I'm very, very in favor to first generation, second generation immigrants. I love that type of person. I think that is a person you place a bet on, you hire because they are hungry and they don't take it all for granted.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, while it motivates me to be ambitious and want to make it big, and that's definitely part of it, but it also kind of grounds me in not just always comparing up. You know, and there's that pithy thing that everyone says, that comparison is a thief of all joy.
Yeah.
Which I think is right. I think the edit to it is comparing up is the thief of all joy. But if you were to do the marble test, which is like, let's say there's a big bunch of marbles, 9 billion marbles that represents every person on the planet, would you be willing to throw your marble in and take a random marble out? If no, then you got it good. And I think I'm like, I would never trade a marble. Like I have a great marble, you know?
That's a great test. Holy cow, man. That's amazing. That's a really good test. I love that. I think that this is really, really interesting because I will tell you from doing this show for like now 5 years, I've noticed that entrepreneurs are usually bred from other entrepreneurs. Mm. And that's kind of the trait. So it's kind of interesting to hear your story of like, kind of just these crazy international points of views and cultures and stuff. And I'm sure that's opened your mind up a lot. And it's probably given you a lot more empathy for those reasons.
Hope so.
I will say travel does that. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm like so big on traveling with my kids now. Because what I realize is every time I go to another state here in the United States, it completely different cultures and values, right? And just exposing them to just different points of
view. So critical. It's
really,
so critical.
Really helpful, I think, to broaden their mind.
I was reading this stat. I should look it up now as I'm saying it. But it was some wild amount of Americans have not left their home state. It was like, it was above 10%, which was really surprising.
I think I remember this. Yeah. And it was actually much more significant than I realized. I think it was closer to 50, wasn't it?
No, I think it was like 17. Here, let me look it up.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. But yeah, I think you're right.
And I remember moving to Nebraska. I had this friend who was like, friends don't let friends live in Iowa. He's like, I've never left the state of Nebraska. Mm. And I was like, wow, that's like just not something I thought about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. 11% of people in America have never traveled outside the state they're born in. Whoa. That's crazy. And 40% of Americans have never been outside of the United States.
I think that's the metric I was thinking about. Yeah. That's the metric I was thinking. It was like something astronomical. I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah, it's wild.
There's literally no way. It was like something very, very significant. But that's cool.
That is a wild stat.
It's a wild stat. Hey, to keep this going, what is your, now that you think about like all the things you know, where you're at, what do you think business success looks like for you now in this next chapter?
You know, I don't want to jinx it, obviously. I've been lucky enough to run a few companies now and to see the different patterns of success. And I was lucky enough to sit in the seat at Atomic and see what the origin patterns of success look like to lead to really, really good and meaningful companies. And I think I've got a company of enduring meaning and value on my hands. I think that's what Boom Pop is.
Nice.
And I think that we have a remarkably rare chance to build a multi-billion dollar enduring brand. I believe that. I know that, actually. We have an incredible team. We have a very novel way of approaching the problem. And frankly, just really lucky timing, which is the ingredient that is critical, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I know that I've created awesome tech companies that just like were 10 years too early and didn't have PMF and didn't work. And so I think in the next chapter, we take this funding that we are getting.
By the time this releases, we have gotten it.
Yeah. We didn't jinx. And I get the company to a place where we are, you know, not just safe and profitable as a business, but growing very, very quickly, leveraging a bunch of the foundational investments we've made in AI and product, and hopefully have some really big announcements. You know, I think. My hope is, you know, 12 months from now, and Boom Pop is kind of a known entity, at least in certain circles in the B2B space. And you take me 5 years from now, who knows, could be a household brand, and that'd be great.
Yeah.
Like I would love it if every event on the planet is done at Boom Pop.
That's a good qualifier. I like that. It's very specific. And we'll be able to look back at it. And then as a leader, what are your goals to be like, you know, in the next, you know, chapter of your professional journey here?
I've been really thinking about this a lot. It's tempting to subscribe to a specific point of view, you know, like Andy Grove, or I've been listening a lot to Brian Chesky, who I was lucky enough to know early on Airbnb. He probably doesn't even remember who I am now, but, and you know, he's been kind of famously talking about founder mode recently and about, you know, a lot of the aspects of that. And, you know, my hope is as the next stage of a leader, a couple things are true. One is I become really world-class at hiring incredible talent and fostering a really close-knit, first-team principled executive team. I think that's critical. And what that means is I can now think 2 to 3 years out. They are thinking 6 months out, and then their teams are executing day to day. I got that, by the way, from Andrew Dudum, who's a close buddy and runs Hims and Hers. He said that was the moment where he felt like it was really cruising. I want to come and introduce a certain amount of, I think, like, it's like good-natured operational discipline. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, have alacrity when you do things. Don't be a jerk, but be on top of your shit. Like, you should know every number. Don't look it up. You should know it. And I think there's a certain amount of like OCD nature in the way you operate a business that kind of guarantees safety and success. You're not going to miss a ball. And the third for me is I think, you know, I'm still learning as a leader, and many leaders are, on how to have the kind of hard, direct conversations when it's uncomfortable. And one thing that I saw myself shift gears into is when it got really hard and we were in the thick of the trenches recently, I flipped it. And there's no more time for being indirect, no more time for, like, you just had to nail it, you had to get it done. And I'm trying to bring that into the culture and let people know you can be conflict seeking without being adversarial. And that's it's a thread, but I think that's actually a necessary ingredient. And so that's my hopes. And
heck yeah, man. That's awesome. Those are good goals, man.
Thanks, man.
This is awesome. All right. Now for the toughest question.
Okay. Used to be boxers. Now it's briefs.
What do you think success looks like for you as a dad in the next chapter?
Success for me as a dad looks like the ability to be present for the kids, which is really hard as an entrepreneur.
Quality of time. Yeah.
The ability to support and take care of the family, you know, the kind of provide protect thing, which is maybe controversial. I don't know why it is, if it is, but that is a role I willingly take on as a parent. I won't say anything more than that. And then finally, I hope a really good guide in life. You know, I believe that guides are such a critical part of everything. And I hope that my kids think of me as a guide as they navigate life. And you know, over the next 3 to 5 years, you know, their consciousness, the way they think, it all starts to evolve really fast, actually. And, you know, I think there's parents who try to be too much of friends, which can be a mistake. There's parents who be too much of, like, these, you know, kind of aloof disciplinarians, which I think can also be a mistake. And I hope that I can find that guide middle ground, which if I can do it, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Man, I love that. So thoughtful. That's good. You're always maximizing every ounce of benefit you can juice out of the situation. It's great.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I love it. It's good. Let me switch gears and ask you my rapid fire questions that I ask every guest so I can make sure you get back out to your business and schedule on time here, okay?
To my kids.
To your kids. and your business. Yeah. I have a whole other set of conversations I want to have with you, because I will tell you, now that I learned a little bit more about your concept and philosophy on kids, it's pretty interesting, because I think a lot about this stuff too. I mean, yeah. I'm assuming you figured that because I have a podcast about it, but yeah, I'm constantly thinking about how to be a good dad and also be successful. And yeah. You know what I mean? And so I love those two things. I love winning so much, and I love being a dad like so much.
Yeah.
And those two things constantly butt up against each other. And, you know, it's just like an incessant level of like torture and pain trying to combat the totally. Two time conflated things, you know?
You know, a question I've been asking myself is, because I felt the same thing, is that experience you're having, which sounds like a foregone conclusion, is it turns out, is that a relic of your subconscious? And is there a way to combat that? And does it not have to be true? You know?
Yeah. Now I'm even more confused. Now I have like 20 yeah. more years of interviews that I have to do. Now I'm going to be all weekend. I know, exactly. I'm going to be all weekend going like, huh, interesting. All right, Healy, let me bring this home.
Okay.
What advice do you have for other parents or soon-to-be parents?
Do research. Don't just wing it.
Nice. That's awesome. Do you have a book that you liked a lot?
Yeah, I have like a... well, it's been by segment of it. I don't have one top of mind, but it's more just like I do like online research, talk to like doulas, talk to other parents, stuff like that.
My wife did a ton of research. I read one book. It was like a dad's guide. I can't remember the name of the book. It's called Dad's Guide something, but it was fascinating because it actually didn't tell you how to be a good dad. It told you how to be a good husband while your wife was going through the three trimesters. Yeah. And then the fourth, they call it the fourth trimester, yeah. which is like the postpartum section, right?
Totally.
Like, and that was really helpful for me because the level of emotions and just it's just so physiological for the,
totally.
for the woman. Right. And so there's all these things that happen to their body that like, I just didn't know, like if I didn't read that book, I would have thought I was the worst human being in the world.
I put together a dad guide that I sent out to all my friends who are about to have kids that is snippets of stuff. Oh, I'll send it to you if you want it. But yeah.
Yeah, so I would love it. Yeah, we should share it to the listeners. Let's do it. Absolutely. Healy's dad guide.
Also, I do have as a follow-up, there are these two women that are amazing, Alicia and Meredith, who actually do Zoom consultations and teachings for new parents to be. They changed our life. I gotta remember the name of it. I'll send it out so you can send it as a follow-up, but they're amazing.
We can link it in the bottom as soon as you send it out. Yep. All right, so if you can go back, Healy, and tell yourself one thing before having kids, what would you tell yourself?
I think I would say drink in every second of it, because it's going to go way faster than you think. Give yourself some grace, and don't forget that while your kids become your primary focus, you can't help it. If you don't focus on your relationship with your partner, it's not going to just naturally take care of itself. You have to invest in that equally.
It's powerful. I love it.
Okay, it's intentionalbirth.co.
What is the most...
Sorry, Meredith and Lisa, it's intentionalbirth.co. Do that. If you do one thing to prepare for being a parent, that's one.
Nice. I'm glad you found it. You are much more action-driven these days. I love it. Everything's like, let's just do it now. What is the most surprising thing that you've learned about yourself after becoming a parent?
That it is true, if you don't, whatever issues you had with your parents, childhood traumas, whatever, if you don't break them intentionally, those are the exact same issues your kids will have with you.
Yeah, that is surprising. That is interesting.
It was really surprising. I saw certain behaviors I would take by default, and I was like, what am I doing? This is exactly what I hated growing up. Yeah. But you have to work on it. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to work on it, exactly. That is interesting. All right, so, and then two fun questions to close us out here. Okay. What's your favorite business book, like of all times, if you had to choose one?
Oh, shit, of all time?
I know you like to read, yeah, because you have a lot of books at your house.
Oh, my gosh, I'm like looking at my thing.
Try to pick one, easy
question. Actually, it's How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie
Classic, I love it.
Yeah, that's great. I can give you my number two and number three, but if you're going to read one, just
go for it. Give the number two, three, just because I'm curious.
Number two is a negotiation book built on those principles called Start With No by Jim Camp.
I haven't read that one. I've heard of it, though. Yeah.
Really good. And then it's a totally different gear shift, almost non sequitur. Traction by Gino Wickman. It goes over EOS. Yep. And I found that years ago from a good friend of mine, Paul, who runs a company called Bulu Box in Lincoln, Nebraska. He was like, hey, have you heard of EOS? You gotta check this out. And I just started implementing it. And man, it's changed my life.
Yeah. So good. I love that. All right, Healy. So when you're not trying to be a super dad, a super CEO, super husband and all of those things to everybody, what does Healy do for his downtime? What's your
you already know this answer.
I do, but I still have to ask it.
Random getting around. I'm a pilot. I sail. I motorcycle. I scuba dive. Those are my like favorite things. And then I try to work out. But those are my favorite things.
I didn't know about the other three things.
You did? Yeah.
Wait, say it again. You scuba dive? Wait, what was it?
Pilot, sail, motorcycle, scuba dive. Those are
you
my life.
You sail too?
Yeah. Yeah. Next time you come out, let's do it.
I've never scuba'd. I really want to try.
Don't do that in San Francisco to start. Do that somewhere warmer.
It's cold and dark, isn't it? Like, kind
of, yeah,
like,
both. And not.
Yeah. Healy, thank you so much for taking some time to talk shop with me and banter back and forth a little bit and helping us get to know you a little bit better.
Got it, man. Thanks for having me, young. This is a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad to have it. Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon, okay? Bye.